Hello, and welcome to PwC's Accounting and Reporting Podcast Series. Our mission is to inform and educate accountants and other stakeholders on today's most important accounting issues. I'm Heather Horn, a partner in our national office, and I'll be your host today. In today's episode, we'll be turning our attention to the activities of the Public Company Accounting Oversight Board, or PCAOB. Even though they regulate accounting firms, not companies, their activities are relevant to everyone in the financial reporting ecosystem, so I'm excited to learn what they've been up to. For this discussion, I'm happy to welcome Brian Croteau, the leader of our Regulatory Risk and Quality Control Group. So Brian, thanks for joining us today. Before we jump in actually to today's agenda, I thought one thing that might be helpful for our listeners is just maybe for you to explain what we mean when we talk about the PCAOB and why it would be relevant even for the companies who are listening.
Yeah, sure, Heather. So the PCAOB, the Public Company Accounting Oversight Board, is the organization that's been established to oversee audits and auditors of public companies and broker-dealer audits as well. That said, certainly they closely coordinate their activities with the SEC, and many of the activities, including their standard setting and inspection functions, have implications not only to the way we conduct our audits, which would be of interest to management and audit committees and others, but also can have other direct and indirect implications relative to financial reporting and the financial reporting ecosystem.
Great. Well, so then let's jump into things. So I think I wanted to start things off today by actually giving a little more background on the PCAOB, just in terms of their board and staff, because I know they've had a lot of changes over the past 18 months. So what can you tell us about that?
Yeah, that's right, Heather. So in December of 2017, the SEC actually appointed five new board members, including a new chairman. And that had been the first time since the board's inception in 2002 that you had a full turnover of the board all at one time. If you think back to 2011, shortly after the resolution of the constitutional challenges to the PCAOB, there had been an appointment of a new chair and a couple new board members at that point in time, and that at the time was viewed as pretty unusual to have three appointments all at once and then one the subsequent year, in fact. And that's part of the reason there are staggered board terms, to actually avoid that kind of dynamic. But here, the complete change was quite remarkable. In my view, Heather, I really do think the SEC was very thoughtful in its approach in appointing the new board members, who have a very diverse range of experience as it relates to financial reporting, auditing, corporate governance, and technology. Also, for the first time, I think it's noteworthy that there's a former preparer, a former public company corporate controller, as well as a former audit partner of a Big Four firm who happens to be a former PwC audit partner. Also, since the appointment of the new board, I think it's also worth noting that there have been extensive senior staff changes as well, including the appointment of a new director of inspections, more recently a new chief auditor who also happens to be a former large firm audit partner, but probably as importantly, if not more so, has extensive standard setting experience, including having served as the deputy vice chair of the IAASB, which is the organization, as you know, that sets international auditing standards. So lots of senior staff changes, others including economic and risk analysis, enforcement, international affairs, external affairs, really all at the top relative to leadership in the senior positions. And maybe the last one I'd note, Heather, is the more recent creation of a stakeholder liaison role in the external affairs group. And really, the board stated that that's really to promote transparency and accessibility to audit committees, preparers, and investors to the organization.
Good, that's helpful. And I think what's been interesting, one of the biggest things I've seen with this big change, is that the new board has really been focused on their strategic planning process and really trying to get input from others into that process. So can you fill us in a little bit about that?
Yep. So on that front, Heather, I would say what's not new is the PCAOB has every year developed a strategic plan. In fact, it's required that they do so under the rules for the SEC's consideration and approval of the PCAOB's annual budget. But what was new, to your point, with the new board is they really took a comprehensive approach to reconsidering all of their programs and a comprehensive approach to developing their strategic plan. Noteworthy to this was the inclusion of significant outreach, so stakeholder surveys, various forms of outreach and public consultation that occurred in connection with the development of the plan. And this culminated in them developing a plan that's really built around four strategic objectives that they've described. Maybe briefly touching on them, you know, one is kind of effective oversight where they intend to drive continuous improvement of audit quality, but by focusing on clearer communications about their assessment of quality and their observations. Another is around innovation. The board intends to be more innovative in their oversight activities, and particularly with respect to the oversight and approach to inspections and standard setting, and at the same time, really prepare for market-driven changes in the audit profession. A third is regarding their improved engagement. I've mentioned some of that already, but the board intends to engage more often and more directly with investors, audit committees, and preparers and other stakeholders, really, really in support of achieving their objectives. And then the last one's, you know, more around internally focused around culture and internal optimization of processes, if you will. On top of all that, I won't go through all their goals, Heather, but the one that to me stands out and is noteworthy is the very first, where they speak to focusing on not only detecting audit deficiencies, but also preventing them from occurring in the first place. And so this clearly introduced a dual track for focus on both prevention and detection, as opposed to a sole or primary focus on detection.
Right. Well, it's interesting. So you have a good segue into my next question, because I think detection, inspection, and the PCOB's involvement in inspections is probably what most people are familiar with in terms of the PCOB and what they do. And so as we look at inspections right now, are we seeing any major changes in their approach? And I guess, what are their kind of key focus areas right now?
Yeah, so Heather, let me start with the latter, maybe in terms of what they're focused on, and then I'm happy to touch on some changes they're making that they've described from a process perspective as well. You know, maybe the first thing I'll say is that they are clearly moving to be a more nimble organization, and so using auditor lingo, undoubtedly they'll keep us on their toes with a good amount of unpredictability. The first area that they are focusing on is technological developments affecting today's audit. So that really looking at the way we as a firm and others within the profession are using software, audit tools, technology, digitization of our practice, and thinking about how that affects the way that they regulate and how that affects audit quality. Along with technology, I'll just throw in, they've also got a focus on cybersecurity that's more focused on the way we're conducting our audits, companies' controls, and the risks to reliable financial reporting. So that's one. Another would be, you know, an area of focus for them has been new accounting standards, not surprisingly, or other regulatory developments. So RevRec, tax reform, they'll certainly be focused on leases and CECL in the years ahead. Thirdly, I would mention the auditor's reporting model, and in particular the critical audit matter reporting portion of that, where they have been particularly interested, even in advance of adoption, of understanding firms' approaches, methodologies, and maybe I think we'll have time maybe to chat about that a little bit later on here still, but that's an area where they have spent significant time, even in advance of adoption of the new standard. The fourth area I'll mention relates to focus on firms' systems of quality controls and our use of audit quality indicators. And here they're really taking a broad view and perspective using teams that cut across multiple firms to take deeper dives into firms' systems of quality controls. And in part, I think, not only to evaluate and assess each of the firm's systems of quality controls, but also to think about how it could affect their standard setting, since that's an area where they intend to move forward in advancing changes to their standards in the years ahead. And then the last area of focus that I'll mention would be auditor independence, and I wouldn't want to leave the implication or suggestion that that's not something they always focus on, because they do, but I think there's a particular focus today in the inspections that we're seeing relative to auditor independence. Then maybe the first part of your question, Heather, related to process changes or how they're changing what they do. They have publicly described and provided transparency around being more nimble and making change. They've described their vertical teams that I just alluded to that cut across firms, and you've got teams that are looking at the same areas across firms from a quality control perspective. They're also doing that with some target areas where they're interested in understanding firms' methodologies in particular areas. For instance, multi-location scoping, where they're cutting across the firms and looking to understand in a deeper way how firms approach those particular areas of the audit. They're also very focused, as I mentioned, on our system of quality control. They've described changes they're making relative to how they select both engagements and areas of focus. And then I would say communication relative to inspections is an area where they've announced that they are intending to change the timing to try to advance and accelerate the timing of issuance of reports and provide improved content in the reports. And that we haven't yet seen in terms of what that content may look like, but it sounds like the next round of reports, so starting in 2018 and going forward, would begin to include some of these enhancements that they've mentioned that they're working through.
Wow, so it should be interesting to see. And you definitely, that's like a mouthful to talk about, but definitely a lot to think about then in terms of different things they're focused on and things that are changing.
Yeah, and on that front, Heather, I would really say that we feel it. We see it and we feel it. There is a lot of change in the approach that the PCAOB is taking, and from a day-to-day basis, we really do see and feel that in the way we interact with them from an inspection perspective. And frankly, I think it's good for us as a firm, it's good for the profession, it's good for the capital markets that they continue to evolve the way they approach inspections, and a lot of that has to do with the way we're evolving as well, using technology, changing the way we're conducting our audits. And so I view that all as a natural evolution of the PCAOB, their processes, and not surprising to see it.
Right, and I think then that goes back to where we started, which is in terms of if you are a member of management or a preparer that's listening to how this impacts you, then you know, indirectly, as they're changing and we're changing our audits, obviously then that impacts as we're conducting our audits. But I guess specifically, Brian, are there developments then, especially on the inspection front, that would be of particular interest from an audit committee perspective?
So Heather, maybe a few things there. And I'll start by saying from an overarching perspective, you know, the focus of the PCAOB and what audit committees would expect in terms of their interest in areas of higher risk and from a financial reporting and audit perspective, auditing, you know, estimates with significant measurement uncertainty or areas that are especially challenging, subjective, or complex in conducting the audit, that's not changing. From that perspective, you know, we'll continue to see that. That's not a surprise. But what I will say are there are some things the PCAOB is doing and changing from an inspection perspective that I think would be of interest to audit committees. One, I'll mention that they've increased the amount of sort of publications that they've had that audit committees may find interesting relative to the results of inspections and then briefings relative to the areas they expect to focus on in inspections. And then also, you know, areas of future focus or new standards. So they've got publications specifically tailored to audit committees relative to, for instance, the adoption of critical audit matter reporting. In addition to kind of the publications at a higher level that audit committees may find of interest, they also are more interested in direct engagement with audit committees in the inspection process. And so it's not new that they've asked to interview on a voluntary basis audit committee chairs in the context of conducting inspections. But in this inspection cycle, they've moved to a model where nearly 100% of the inspections that they conduct, they are at least asking to voluntarily interview the audit committee chair as part of that inspection. I'll say they're not intending to evaluate the audit committee. It's about evaluating the auditor and getting the audit committee's perspectives on that particular audit in the context of evaluating the auditor and the audit. At the same time, back to the outreach point and the stakeholder outreach that they've included in their strategic plan, there's an element of this that relates to understanding from audit committees what their perspectives are relative to audits in general, the PCAOB in general, and the firm in general that is conducting the particular audit. Another more specific area recently is the PCAOB issued specific guidance relative to our application of Rule 3526, which relates to our communications with audit committees about auditor independence. That's going to be a change where, in fact, where there are violations, for instance, of the independence rules, but nonetheless, we in the audit committee determine that it's appropriate to continue because the auditor remains sufficiently impartial and objective. There'll be new language in those letters that's described in the PCAOB's guidance that would instead have us say that we, but for the violations, we would essentially be independent, as opposed to describing that we remain independent, and then we describe that we are objective and impartial. That kind of guidance, given the communication relates to communications with audit committees, would probably be of interest to audit committees as well. So there's these broader points, if you will, and then I think the ongoing changes in the program will lead to observations, findings, that I think audit committees will find of interest in the year and years ahead as the PCAOB again, continues to be nimble and change the way they do things.
So, Brian, I think that is interesting in terms of audit committee and PCAOB direct interaction and just the additional insight that it's going to give the PCAOB from an audit perspective. So I do think it'll be interesting to see how that then comes around and is reflected in the reports they're making on us. The other point I would make to our listeners is that some of these publications referred to, I've looked at, and that was why I actually invited Brian to come on to the show in the first place, because I do think they're good resources and helpful in terms of what companies may want to think about, what audit committees may want to think about, areas of focus, et cetera. So definitely encourage preparers to take a look at those if they have not already.
Yeah, that's spot on, Heather. And I think even where the PCAOB has publications that might even be more granular or technical from an auditor perspective, they've tried to repackage that and try to frame it from the perspective of what may be of most interest to audit committees, which I think make them very readable and digestible and very focused relative to the audit committee's role. And I think I forgot to mention, and probably should have, there's actually a homepage or a page for audit committees on the PCAOB's website, so audit committee members can actually go to that one page, they can bookmark it, and all of these documents that are intended for audit committees are all housed on that one page.
Oh, that's helpful, and actually we will include that in the show notes so people can easily access that. So Brian, I think then that's a good segue into our next topic, which would actually be the PCAOB's standard setting and their research agenda priorities. Can you give us an update on what the PCAOB has been looking at and what we can expect to see?
Sure, Heather. Well, so most recently, the PCAOB did finalize their projects relative to auditing estimates, including fair value, as well as the use of specialists in conducting audits. And the SEC recently approved those standards. They'll be effective for 2020, and as we move ahead and we think about the adoption of those standards, which we're obviously working to adopt now in terms of developing changes to our methodology, guidance, and tools, I would say that this is more of an evolution versus a revolution. Many of the changes that were made in terms of auditing estimates are reflective of the kinds of changes that we as a firm certainly have made over the years, but nonetheless, the PCAOB standards do have new requirements in them. There's a focus on applying appropriate professional skepticism, paying attention carefully to potential for management bias from an estimates perspective, and then from a specialist perspective, making sure there's appropriate consideration relative to the work that the specialist has done, their knowledge, skills, capabilities, and ultimately the sufficiency of the work for the purposes of our audit. On that front, from a specialist perspective, the PCAOB really broke the standards down into three kinds of specialists. There's company specialists, there's then auditor either engaged or auditor employed specialists, and different requirements for each. Again, I would say more of an evolution than revolution in terms of the degree of change, but nonetheless, there will be implications of that. The other point I would say relative to the estimate standard is the PCAOB included new guidance relative to the use, a firm's use of pricing services as a source relative to auditing fair value. You know, that's guidance and requirements that certainly we'll be incorporating. Again, fairly consistent, I think, with how practice has evolved over time. In terms of projects that are on the PCAOB's agenda that aren't yet finalized, they are working on a project relative to the auditor's use of other auditors. So this could be us as a firm using one of our other network firms in another jurisdiction, or it could be us using another firm that's outside of our network in conducting a multi-location audit. That standard could have fairly significant implications in the way that audits are required to be conducted, planned, conducted, and supervised. And so we've had some fairly significant comments through multiple of the comment periods that the PCAOB's had on that standard. And then I would say from a research agenda perspective, the PCAOB, as I mentioned, has quality control standard setting on their research agenda, and I think part of what they're doing relative to the deep dives, looking at firms' quality controls now will inform where they head relative to those standards. The International Auditing Standards Board is working through their own project at the moment. They're ahead of the PCAOB, at least in terms of having a proposal. The comment period just closed in July, and the PCAOB has been monitoring that closely and really thinking about moving ahead with their own project in that respect. The other point I might make just in terms of their research agenda, and there's a number of projects on it, but the other one relates to the use of data and technology in the audit, and this could have fairly pervasive implications relative to how they think about their standards, either individually as they're going through each standard setting project, or at some point they could decide there's something broader to do relative to updating updating their standards. For now, it's been a lot of information gathering and understanding as to where firms and where companies actually are going relative to their use of technology. So those are some examples. The research agenda and standard setting agenda, you can find the projects on the PCOB's website. There are project pages for each one of their projects, and you can actually sign up for any that you're interested in, and you'll receive automatic updates relative to those particular projects if you want to tailor notifications in that way as well, which is helpful for those interested in following some of those projects.
Okay, Brian, that's helpful and sounds like some good resources for people to look at if they're interested in more detail on some of these projects, and definitely sounds like there'll be more to come in terms of the impact as some of these progress.
Yep,
so
for sure.
Thank you for that. And then with that, why don't we move to our last topic today, and it's something you briefly touched on earlier and something that I think has gotten a lot of attention from both auditors and preparers, which would be the critical audit matters. And I know that that's now in effect for some filers. So maybe if you could give just some background, talk a little bit about the effective date, and then talk about what preparers and auditors should be thinking about when they're thinking about CAMS.
Sure, Heather. Yep. So critical audit matter reporting, as you've mentioned, is now effective for some public company audits. So starting with June 30 year ends of this year relative to large accelerated filers, and then a year and a half later, December 15th of 2020 for everyone else essentially that's subject to the requirements of CAM reporting. And the PCOB really, I think, took a very practical and responsible approach relative to this phased adoption period and really allowed companies and audit committees and auditors to work together so that everyone could understand not only how firms would apply the standards, but what some of the implications may be of critical audit matter reporting as we work to prepare. What critical audit matters are, essentially they are matters that are either communicated or required to be communicated to audit committees and that involve especially challenging, subjective, or complex auditor judgment. So as we think about that for any particular audit, it's going to be specific to the audit. We'll think about the areas, again, that were, as we've conducted the audit, probably took some of the most judgment, the most time, the most effort, areas of higher risk from an audit perspective. It won't be surprising for people to hear that where companies have critical accounting estimates, some number of those likely lend themselves to areas that would also be identified as critical audit matters. Although we will see other areas as well. You could have non-recurring transactions in a particular year, or there could be other challenges that the auditor faces in conducting the audits that could drive a matter to be reported as a CAM. Importantly, though, from a PCOB standards perspective, CAMs have to be rooted in matters that are either accounted for or disclosed in the financial statements. And so this isn't just, you know, the auditor providing commentary about any matter, including external matters that affect the company. It's going to be grounded in the first instance, something that is indeed reported in the company's financial reporting.
Maybe just to pause you, yeah. I think the intent then is not for the auditor to be disclosing new information about the company, correct?
That's right. That's generally true. We would not expect that we would generally need to disclose original information about the company, although we did find in our dry runs there are circumstances where in order to properly describe the matter and not provide confusion about the breadth and scope of the matter, in some cases companies have found that it would be helpful to modify their disclosures in some way so that it's clearer what aspects of an account or disclosure we might be referring to when describing a CAM. The other aspect that would be original information, although not about the company, of course, really then relates to how we describe not only why we chose the matter to be a CAM, to identify it as a CAM, but then also how we responded in terms of our audit procedures. But you're right, Heather, in terms of information about the company itself, generally we expect it to be rare that we'd need to disclose original information. Yeah. And what we found, Heather, you know, some companies, some audits, we've got, you know, one CAM, others we've got three, four, five, but typically on average we found so far in our dry runs, two CAMs on average was pretty typical. You know, I've sort of described some of the areas that we've seen relative to reporting of CAMs. I'll also mention that, you know, we engaged very regularly with others in the profession through the Center for Audit Quality and with the PCOB on the approach that we were taking. This is an area where, given the public nature of the reporting, having at least a degree of consistency in how the profession is thinking about applying the requirements, I think is important. The last thing we would want as a profession is to confuse investors relative to, and other stakeholders, relative to the kind of the application of the standard and the nature of the matters that we're reporting as CAMs. That said, again, it's going to be specific to each audit, and it'll be important to read and understand the purpose and limitations of CAMs, what they are, what they aren't, and then what the audit auditor says about them relative to, again, why they determine certain matters were CAMS.
Yeah, and I think it's another point that's interesting, as you kind of said, that all of this discussion, but it's not intended that that means then that this is boilerplate, correct? I mean, we're not expecting to see everyone to have the same CAMS in their statements. To your point, you could have a different number, and it is intended to be specific to the company that's being audited.
That's right, and maybe using some of the PCOB's words, they've said in their guidance that if you've written a CAM and it's a CAM that you essentially could apply on any audit without changing it, you probably should reread it and think about whether it's drafted appropriately. And frankly, even in areas that would be similar areas from company to company, whether it be in some of our common areas such as around goodwill impairment or intangible impairment considerations or business combinations, obviously, you'd start with the very specifics about the company in terms of the reporting unit or the intangible assets, and you'd look to the disclosures the company is making in describing those matters. We start with that as at least thinking about how we might describe the underlying matter that is a CAM, and then, of course, the reasons why we have the CAM, as well as the procedures, would be tailored relative to the particular audit. Now, you know, having said that, there'll be some areas that may have some degree of commonality. The approach to auditing goodwill impairment isn't going to be that dramatically different from company to company. But yet, again, we tailor it to the specific areas that we called out as perhaps key assumptions and areas that we needed to focus on relative to that particular engagement in conducting the audit.
Yeah, and I guess then the other point similar to that is this isn't really, like, as a company, you're not trying, I'm just trying to only have one CAM, or if I have 10 CAMs, it's a problem. It's more, it's really intended to be a reflection of the nature of that business. And, you know, maybe if you have a business combination one year, or you have, to your point, goodwill or something else, I mean, that also can change over time.
Yeah, that's right. I'm actually glad you raised that, Heather, because that's something that comes up fairly frequently in our travels relative to management and audit committees suggesting, well, maybe there's a way I can reduce the number of CAMs that I have. And, you know, I would say generally what you've said is right. I mean, the CAMs will be the CAMs based on the nature of the audit work that's required relative to particular accounts or disclosures in a given year. That said, there could be circumstances, particularly if a CAM is driven by certain control conditions, if there's a material weakness, for example, or if a company has really manual processes or complex processes in a particular area, that may drive a CAM that management does have some ability to control to the extent that the control deficiency were remediated or the controls were made less complex. That could change the way we approach the audit. So some of those types of matters could be driven by conditions at the company that are under management's control. But I would say generally the CAMs that we saw in the dry runs are not, there are many fewer of those nature versus the kind that arise simply because the area is especially challenging, subjective or complex to audit, just given the inherent risk nature of the underlying accounting.
Right, so the business inherently has this risk in many of these cases.
Yes, yeah.
Right, so that's helpful. So then, Brian, any final thoughts for our listeners?
I guess the last thing I would say, and I'd just bring it back to where you started relative to the change, Heather, in the organization, and then some of what I've said relative to their transparency and outreach. I really encourage our listeners to engage with the PCOB, whether it be through comment letters on standard-setting projects, whether it be through some of the outreach that they do specifically to audit committees or others, or in fact, it may be through their new stakeholder liaison role and the like. I think it's a very useful exercise to think about how one can contribute to and influence in an appropriate manner the activities of the PCOB. Again, they are interested in perspectives. They're interested in improving not only what auditors do from an auditing and audit quality perspective, but being a part of contribution to improvement, ultimately, of reliable financial reporting. And so I know they're there to listen. They're interested in input. And so I'd really encourage all stakeholders to think about the appropriate way in which to engage with the PCOB.
Good. Well, I think that's a good reminder, Brian. And again, thank you for coming on. I think giving us a good education on some of the changes of the PCOB and some of what we can expect in the future. So appreciate the insight.
Thanks, Heather. Happy to do it.
Please join me here again next week. To make sure you never miss an episode, subscribe to our podcast series wherever you find your content. And we'd love to hear from you, so please leave us a review. For PwC, I'm Heather Horn. Thanks for tuning in.
This podcast is brought to you by PwC, all rights reserved. PwC refers to the U.S. member firm or one of its subsidiaries or affiliates, and may sometimes refer to the PwC network. Each member firm is a separate legal entity. Please see www.pwc.com/structure for further details. This podcast is for general information purposes only and should not be used as a substitute for consultation with professional advisors.